Here's an old story. Small towns across the country see population decline as the farming generation dwindles and young people move to bigger cities. Well, here's a new twist to that story. One town in western Kansas is getting help from an unlikely source. An undertaker from Arizona plans to revive the dying town by catering to the dead. From member station KMUW in Wichita, Carla Eccles has the story.
The tiny town of Preston, Kansas, once boasted a very active main street with two grocery stores, a post office, a cafe, a drugstore, and a filling station. But now they're gone, along with the town's high school and church. In fact, only 170 people live here. Boarded up buildings line either side of Main Street, a city hall and senior center remain within view of two towering grain elevators. Ken Stanton plans to change much of that. The 53-year-old mortician with a warm and easy smile has been in the funeral business for 18 years. He's no stranger to Preston. For 35 years, he and his wife Donna have come here to visit relatives. Donna's father dreamed of a revitalized Preston, and Stanton embraced that dream.
I saw this little town and I saw some pictures of it back in the early 1900s and saw what it was and believed that this town could thrive again.
So, a year ago, he bought the run-down bar and grill on Main Street to turn into a mortuary and crematorium. Today, Stanton and brother-in-law Mike Salden are surveying the gutted 94-year-old brick building.
Mike, can we put a jack in here to help support some of this weight?
Yeah, because you're not going to use this void, so we'll go ahead and fill this void here,
right.
Okay?
The goal is to complete construction and open the facility by January. Mayor Wayne Scott was a student in the last graduating class of Preston High School in 1966. He admits that news of an undertaker investing big time in Preston was at first met with some skepticism.
But then when Ken came into one of our council meetings and started requesting permits and inquiring about acquiring different properties around town and a few buildings on Main Street, then we realized it could possibly be a reality for us, and then I think everyone got quite excited, and that's where we are now.
Donna Stanton plans to work alongside her husband in the mortuary and support her son's new business, a 50-style restaurant to be built down the street. It's not just Ken and Donna Stanton coming here. It's more than 30 family members and friends.
My sister from South Carolina is coming in with her husband, and she'll be staying out here. And my other sister came with me. And then, of course, my brother-in-law, my other sister's in Phoenix, so they'll end up here.
But even though some Preston residents are welcoming them here, Ken Stanton says some others aren't so sure.
I think there's a group of people that are kind of wondering, what are these people trying to do, come in and take over the whole place?
Mike Snell has been branch manager of the Cairo Co-op in Preston for 16 years. He hopes the Stanton clan can jumpstart this town.
The city of Preston is just about a dead town. We've got the co-op here and a local meat plant, and there's just not a whole lot going on in the town anymore.
And while Preston is tiny, Ken Stanton plans to draw funeral business from a 50-mile radius, and he wants to encourage others to give small towns a second look.
Metropolitan communities are getting so packed with people. So many people are out of work. People are starting to gravitate further out where housing and things are a little bit less expensive. So I think there's an opportunity for growth and things to happen in small communities and small towns if people would just be willing to be ready for some change.
And whether Preston, Kansas lives or dies may rest in part to the success of the funeral business. For NPR News, I'm Carla Eccles.
This is NPR, National Public Radio. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. Today, there was good and surprising news on the employment front. According to the government, the economy shed just 11,000 jobs in November, far fewer than expected, and the unemployment rate edged down from 10.2% to exactly 10%. But analysts say the nation's job troubles are not over. NPR's Frank Langfitt explains.
When the Bureau of Labor Statistics released its jobs numbers this morning, economists were delighted.
I was surprised, and I've gradually sort of relaxed into happiness about it.
The panic is over in terms of the job market.
This was a much stronger employment report than we were expecting.
That was Heidi Shierholz of the Economic Policy Institute, John Sylvia with Wells Fargo, and David Weiss of Standard & Poor's. In the previous 3 months, job losses had averaged over 130,000. So even President Obama was surprised the November figure was so low. Christina Romer, the White House's chief economist, described their exchange.
When I told the president, he said, "You mean 111,000 job loss?" I said, "No, it's 11."
Beyond the headline figure, the report contained other encouraging data. Heidi Shierholz noted that businesses gave workers more hours.
That is a really crucial signal, because what we know is that employers will restore the hours of the workforce they have before they hire new workers.
Temporary employment, another leading indicator of job growth, rose by more than 50,000. David Weiss says one reason job losses are ebbing is because consumers are a bit more optimistic.
Some of this is psychological, that people panic in the beginning of a downturn. We certainly saw that 6 months ago. Everybody was convinced the world was coming to an end. And when they realized that it wasn't, they're out there a little more confident in spending again. But there's also a natural cycle here. You can only run inventories down so far before you got to start producing again. It's the old analogy that, you know, eventually you got to replace the light bulb, and that requires going to the store and buying something.
The employment numbers are a shot in the arm to the White House. Republicans have criticized President Obama over the dreadful jobs picture. And just yesterday, the White House held a summit to address the unemployment problem. At a town hall meeting in Allentown, Pennsylvania today, the president touted the November numbers.
So overall, this is the best jobs report that we've seen since 2007.
Then he tempered it with realism.
But I do want to keep this in perspective. We've still got a long way to go. I consider one job lost, one job too many.
The job market has a very long way to go. Since the recession began 2 years ago, more than 7 million jobs have disappeared. Sectors such as manufacturing and construction continue to shrink, and it's taking longer and longer for unemployed people to find new work. Even when jobs begin to grow again, economists expect the unemployment rate will increase. Heidi Shierholz says that's because, at first, monthly job gains just won't be enough to absorb new workers.
The population is growing all the time. New babies are being born. There's new graduates being minted. So unless we're adding roughly 127,000 jobs, the unemployment rate will rise.
Shierholz says she doesn't expect the job market to really start growing until spring or summer of next year. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Washington.
Since the spring, we've occasionally heard from freelancer Caitlin Shetterly. In April, money troubles led her and her husband Dan Davis to leave Los Angeles with their three-month-old baby to move in with Caitlin's mother in Maine. Dan is a freelance photographer, but he hadn't had a job since December. With the new baby, Caitlin had been counting on Dan to help support them. They lived with Caitlin's mother for 5 months, and then in September, Dan decided to go back to school. Here, Caitlin continues her family's story.
Your class goes from
2 to 5.
At the end of August, Dan and I moved into our own apartment in Portland, Maine. 2 weeks later, we dove headfirst into what felt like our only lifeline. A master's for Dan, which we hoped would bring more opportunities if and when the recession lifted. 3 days a week, he took the bus 2 hours south to Boston with a packed lunch of peanut butter sandwiches, homemade hummus, pretzels, and apples.
You think that you're going to be pretty sick of hummus in a little while?
3 nights a week, Dan drove a half an hour each way to a bartending job. I was alone with our 9-month-old son and trying during nap times and at night to do a small amount of freelance work, and also work on a book proposal inspired by my blog and NPR diaries. We were barely scraping by. One morning, as Dan, our son, and I ate breakfast, I told him that caring for a baby and the household alone, and also trying to make money on top of that, was starting to feel impossible for me. For Dan, yeah, look, it was hard to come home every night.
I'll have a good day in classes, and I feel like this is the right thing. I feel challenged by professors, by other students, and I feel like, all right, we're moving. This is going to be a good experience, and it's going to put us in a better place. And then I come home, and you've had a bad day, or you're overwhelmed, and then it goes from being something that feels positive to being feeling like a nuisance and troublesome.
3 weeks in, Dan and I were talking about what it would look like if he dropped out of school. But first, we tried to trim every bit of fat from our budget. We lowered our cell phone plans, got a landline with no features, started hanging our laundry to dry, and began ordering food from a bulk buyer's club.
Chickpeas, organic, 25 pounds. They're $1.09 a pound.
Yeah, it's 70 cents cheaper.
Okay, so let's get those.
Still, the stress was mounting. With Dan's travel costs and the unpredictability of his bartending tips, the numbers were not working out. Creditors from our year of financial collapse were dogging our answering machine.
Wednesday, 3:04 p.m. Friday, 9:50.
We hit a breaking point when Dan decided to call my dad to ask for help.
It was a hard conversation because I had to admit to your father that I made a mistake when I already felt like I've made a mistake, several mistakes that got us into this situation. And, yeah, the end result was I had to ask him for money and for him to help us.
I understood that as a man and a father, Dan couldn't help but blame himself for everything that had happened to us since the recession began. My dad came through with the margin we were short. Even so,
Saturday,
our debt loomed.
10:56 a.m.
Suddenly, a light appeared in the darkness. The book proposal I'd written about our journey west and back home again started to get interest from publishers. My agent set up phone meetings, and then, overnight, there were offers on the table. We sold the book. That day, we had $16 in our bank account and an empty fridge. Like that, our lives changed.
Great, pal. Our lives. Just signed my contract.
Excited. Great. How do you feel?
When I called my mom to tell her we might not have to move back in with her just yet, she said that we needed to remember that luck was not the primary ingredient in this sudden, exciting success.
You know, I really do believe that you and Dan have worked very hard, and that counts for something. So when opportunity comes along, that you have a preparation for it. That's what I think. But yeah, I mean, it's a Cinderella story.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit.
My book deal is not enough money to retire on or even buy a house. But to us, it's huge because it gives us a chance to bail out. No sooner do we adjust to our good fortune, however, than we start eyeing the ominous pile of bills in the corner.
I mean, here's what we have today. We have our credit card bills. So we have our hospital bill for what the insurance didn't cover. We have to pay back your dad.
Well, we're not going to be able to pay everything at once.
As we pay back and equalize our lives, Dan and I know that what we're learning from our journey through the recession is to simplify. Last weekend, we were back home at my mother's, where we lived for 5 months this year. We celebrated Thanksgiving, made kindling, and got her house ready for winter. This holiday season, we're celebrating the time we've spent together as a family and would never have been lucky enough to have shared if the recession had not rocked our world and made us come home.
You can go to our website, npr.org, for a link to Caitlin Shetterly's blog about her family's journey through the recession, along with her husband Dan's photos documenting their story. Caitlin Shetterly's story for NPR have been edited by Andrea De Leon and produced by Rolando Arrieta. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Been some time since there was anything positive to say about the job market, but a report released yesterday by the Labor Department contained the clearest evidence yet that the unemployment picture may finally be improving. The government said the unemployment rate not only did not go up, but actually fell a bit in November to 10%. NPR's Jim Zaroli reports.
The government said businesses cut 11,000 jobs from their payrolls last month. The losses were a tenth of what economists had been expecting, and they paled beside the massive job hemorrhaging that took place last winter. The government also said job losses in September and October were lower than first thought. Speaking in Pennsylvania, President Obama called the report the best we've seen since 2007.
And this is good news, just in time for the season of hope. Yeah, I've got to admit, my chief economist, Christy Romer, she got about four hugs when she handed us the report.
It wasn't just that job losses were so low. The report also said temporary help agencies added 52,000 jobs during the month, the fourth straight increase. Dean Baker is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research.
It tends to be the case these days that employers take people on as temporary workers before they actually get permanent employees. So if this isn't an aberration, that's a very good sign.
Then to the length of the average work week also rose, which economists say is often a good sign as well. Nigel Gault of IHS Global Insight says employers have been cutting back jobs for a long time.
And they've probably reached the point where they can't actually extract any more out of their existing workforce. So they need to add hours, and in some cases they need to add staff if they're to continue to increase output.
Once businesses do start hiring, they will have lots of applicants. At a New York State job center in White Plains this week, more than 700 people showed up looking for work. They included Candy Izzello, who lost her job in radio sales just 2 months ago. She's relatively optimistic.
I'm hearing that, you know, some companies are thinking about hiring again for the beginning of the year. I've been on a few different job interviews that said, yes, they are interviewing now for 2010. So it's a good sign. I have hope.
But a lot of the people here have been out of work for many months. Henry Font is a freelance designer of electrical systems. With the collapse in construction, he's had to sell his apartment to survive.
For me, that's the total slowdown. You know, it's like crashing. There is no work. I've been unemployed practically since January. And it's going to be a year.
The government says 14 million people are unemployed, and half of those have lost their jobs since September 2007, when the recession began. Dean Baker says it will take a long time for the labor market to recover, yesterday's jobs report notwithstanding.
And even if we take the best possible reading of this, we could say, okay, maybe we're on the right track, but we have so far to go. That we're looking at a situation, you know, even, say, 3 years out, where suppose we had 6% unemployment, we would ordinarily consider that a horrible story.
And President Obama said something similar yesterday. As encouraging as the jobs report was, he said the unemployment problem is still dire, and Congress needs to pass legislation to create jobs. The president said he'll unveil some ideas to jumpstart private sector hiring next Tuesday. Jim Zaroli, NPR News, New York.